Hello everyone, my name is Elijah David Mitchell, 12th Apostolic Sabbatarian Congregation of South Africa, 12th Hour, New York, Texas. Today is July 22, 2017, it's the 27th day of the 4th month, 2021. We just got our first service today with a song entitled, The Church in the Wildwood. There's a church in the valley by the wildwood, no lovelier spot in the bay. No place is so dear to much altar as the little brown church in the fair. Oh, come to the church in the wildwood. Oh, come to the church in the fair. No spot is so dear to much altar as the little brown church in the fair. Oh, come to the church in the wildwood, to the trees where the wildflowers bloom, where the parting hymn will be chanted. We will weep by the side of the tomb. Church in the wildwood, oh, come to the church in the fair. No spot is so dear to much altar as the little brown church in the fair. How sweet you don't appear, Sabbath morning, who lifts to the pervading bell. With dawn so sweet we are calling, oh, come to the church in the fair. Oh, come to the church in the wildwood. Oh, come to the church in the fair. No spot is so dear to much altar as the new brown church in the fair. On the church in the fair, for the wildwood, when day fades away into night, I'll refrain from this part of my childhood. We may wait to the mansions of light. In the wildwood, oh, come to the church in the fair. No spot is so dear to much altar as a little brown church in the fair. Part 4, Prophecy and the Daniel and Revelation. We're going to continue now with Shepherd Rod, Volume 2. We're on page 93, and we're on paragraph 1. For the message regarding the 144,000 and a call for the Reformation presented unto the Seventh-day Adventist congregation in 1930 was in like manner rejected. Therefore, as the leadership of the churches have never accepted the message at any time, we are certainly fulfilling the following prophecy. For the wise men are ashamed, they are dismayed and taken. Lo, they have rejected the word of the Yahweh. And what wisdom is in them? For the pastors are become brutish and have not sought the Yahweh, therefore they shall not prosper. And all their flocks shall be scattered, Jeremiah 8:9 and Jeremiah 10:21. For the seven heads of the leopard-like beast represent this mystery of the unrighteousness and hypocrisy, showing how each one fell into the trap as they came to it. Therefore, since Luther's time and on, Yahweh permitted that his people should be cast out by the Satan's flood, the unconverted. Thus he has been calling his congregation from one movement to another. Now pay attention to this. We had our first movement was in 1500 B.C. about, when Moses was called and sent down into Egypt to deliver the children of Israel out of Egypt to come out and form Yahweh's nation of Israel. That's the first movement. Yahshua came 1500 years later, and he started the second movement in the earth with the apostles. And then in 1833, Yahweh raised up a William Miller, First Day Adventist, and started a third movement in the earth. And then in 1844, he raised up Ellen G. White and started a fourth movement in the earth with the Adventists. And in 2002, he raised up Denton Bronken, gave him a new name, Elijah David, and started the fifth and final great movement in the earth, in the 12th parabolic hell. Yahweh is perfect. The first four movements started with the first parabolic hour on your time clock, coming out of Egypt early in the morning, first hour. Your second movement was announced at the 3 o'clock hour with Yahshua hanging on the cross. And then William Miller answered the call at the end of the sixth hour, 1833. Ellen G. White answered the call at the end of the ninth hour in 1844. And Elijah David answered the call at the end of the 11th parabolic hour in 2002. This is where we are today in the stream of time. Okay, let's continue our study. Therefore, they who lower the standard and refuse reform at the sounding of the trumpet are the very ones who cause division in the congregation of Yahweh. Now I beseech you, brethren, mark them which cause divisions and offenses contrary unto the doctrine which you have learned, and avoid them. For they that are such serve not our Savior, Yahshua the Messiah, but their own belly, and by the good words and fair speeches deceive the hearts of the simple. Romans 16, 17, and 18. Since the history of the congregation is such, and the last section, Laodicea, is in a worse condition and under greater condemnation than any previous one, and as there is no time left for calling out a new movement, then a message of amazing light and stern rebuke through the word of Yahweh with the manifestations of the divine judgment is the only remedy that can bring true conversion and reformation. This thus preparing a congregation to stand without spot, wrinkle, or any such thing, of which only can be said, and the dragon was wroth at the woman, that is the congregation of the SDA as a body, and went to make war with the remnant of her seed, which keep the commandments of Yahweh and have the testimony of Yahshua Messiah. Revelation 12:17. It is the purity of the congregation that incurs the wrath of the dragon. These seven congregations were also symbolized by the seven candlesticks and the leadership of the same congregations by the seven angels. And we know who the seventh angel was. And that was Brother Johnson, third feeding pastor for the Seventh-day Adventists, the third step of the genuine movement of the fourth movement, not the fifth movement. Because V.T. Hall just got through, we just got through reading from V.T. Hall where he said there's not any time for another movement. He thought he was in the fifth movement. Read, he said that. He thought that he was given charge of the fifth movement and that he was affecting a movement in the earth. But see, what V.T. Hallett didn't understand was that when you are put in charge of a new movement, then you don't have to go and take your message back to the movement that has just preceded you. But he felt like that with his new movement in 1930, he thought he had the fifth one, Matthew 20, verse 6. He thought that, and he said, well, I've got to go back to the Mother Church. We got to go to SDA, because we're Davidian Seventh-day Adventists. We are Seventh-day Adventists, too. We just have an advanced truth and a message for the Mother Church. So he's going by the prophecies in Hosea and so forth. And where it says, plead with mother and go back to her. Yeah, this is true. Especially when you're in the same movement with her. But he thought he was in the fifth movement. And the Mother Church, because he knew the Adventist Church was in the fourth movement. But he didn't see that. He didn't see that fifth movement of Matthew 20, verse 6, about that fifth group of laborers called at the end of the 11th parabolic hour. He didn't see that. He thought that, yeah, he saw it, but he thought the 11th parabolic hour sounded in 1930, and so therefore he was to take the message back to Mama. But the thing is, when a new movement comes, like in 2002 at Kermit, Texas, when I was put in charge of the fifth movement to succeed Brother Johnson, because he was closing out the fourth movement for the Adventists, and so therefore I give him a message at the closing out of the Adventist movement, of the fourth movement. I give him messages for 33 years. But I just give them to him. I didn't give them to anybody else. So therefore, when you got a message from Mother, you just give it to the prophet. You don't give it to anybody else. That's what I did. I gave it to the prophet for 33 years. And when that time was up, and I gave him his final message, and he rejected it, then Yahweh rejected him and cut him off. And so therefore, you don't have to go back to that congregation again of Israel, because that was a seventh congregation, that was a seventh candlestick. Brother Johnson represented, he was a seventh angel to that candlestick, and so therefore whenever he rejected the final message of warning that I give to him, then the seventh candlestick came to an end, and inspiration for the seventh candlestick came to an end. And the only hope for the Adventist Church, as far as continuing on to have anything to go in further into the end time, they would have to accept the message that I give through their prophet. And Brother Johnson rejected it also. Therefore, we don't need to belabor the point anymore on this. Let's just continue to read now. So we read, the mystery of the seven stars which thou sawest in my right hand, and the seven golden candlesticks. Now it says that this is a mystery. The mystery of the seven stars. It would have to be a mystery. And the seven golden candlesticks. That's a mystery. The seven stars are the angels of the seven congregations, and the seven candlesticks which thou sawest are the seven congregations. I might add the seven congregations of Israel. Revelation 1:20. And unto the angel of the congregation of the Laodiceans write, Revelation 3:14. So now he's addressing one single angel, one of the seven stars in his right hand. Yahshua is addressing this angel. And it turns out that the mystery of the seven stars have finally been solved, because when Yahweh showed me the names of each one of these seven ministers put in charge of the seven candlesticks, it was quite awe-inspiring. Paul was the first angel of the first candlestick of Ephesus, and Mont Luther was the second angel of the second candlestick, Smyrna. And John Knox was the angel of the third candlestick, Pergamos. And John Wesley, the Methodist, was the fourth angel of the fourth candlestick, Thyatira. Alexander Campbell, the Baptist, he was the fifth angel of the fifth candlestick of 1810. William Miller was the sixth angel of the sixth candlestick, Philadelphia, in Revelation 3:7. That is in 1833. And then Ellen G. White became the angel of the seventh candlestick. And this angel of the seven candlestick, you say, well, how did Brother Johnson end up being the angel? Well, the congregation, like William Miller, he was the angel of the sixth candlestick, and he was the angel when his movement came to an end. He had the third movement. He was still in charge when his movement came to an end. Ellen G. White was put in charge of the fourth movement, but the fourth movement didn't come to an end with her leadership. She died. I was reading this call the seventh candlestick is a great paradox. There's a double leadership in this congregation. And so, when she died, V.T. Oliver was put in charge as the angel of the seventh candlestick. But he died in 1955, and the movement was still ongoing with the Adventists. And then Ben Roden took over to succeed V.T. Hollis in 1955, and his time was up in 1970, and so therefore he had to relinquish the candlestick. The seventh candlestick. He didn't do it willingly, he didn't do it knowingly, but the prophecy did it for him. And so, then Ben Roden died. Well, Brother Johnson succeeded Ben Roden, and so the candlestick was passed on to him. He's put in charge of the seventh candlestick. Let us hear. And then when Brother Johnson's time was up in 2003, Yahweh brought the candlestick to a close, and he spewed the angel out of his mouth. And so that's when the candlestick came to an end. So I inherited the kingdom that was developed by William Miller, Ellen G. White, V.T. Hollis, Ben Roden, and Verlis Johnson. I inherited that kingdom in the 12th parabolic hour and the 5th movement with a new message. So, I don't have to go to the Adventist Church now like I before believed that I should do. I don't have to go to them anymore. And because the prophet that was in charge of the candlestick of Laodicea, he's dead and gone, and I give him his last message in 2002, 2003, and so therefore I don't have to go back and do any kind of a campaigning now into the Adventist Church anymore. Nobody does. But we can take their members, those latest in members, and if they want to come and join us, come on out and join us, then they're free to do so. And then we'll give them the message of the hour to them, not the old message of the Adventist, only to teach them the history of the Adventist and their sojourn that they had while they were still in charge of the leadership. All right, let us continue on reading. In Revelation 3:14, note the message is addressed to the angel, the prophet, the minister of the leadership, it says here, and not to the candlestick. The church is a body. Okay, so that's the reason why I said the message was directed to the angel, to the prophet, not to this congregation of the body. Because I was never permitted to ever stand in the pulpit or in front of the church at Gilead Center and deliver them a message for the whole church. Never, never. And Brother Johnson said he would not allow that to happen anyway. But I delivered messages to him many times. For the condemnation is not to the candlestick. Okay? But unto the angel, because thou sayest, I am rich and increased with goods and have need of nothing, and knowest not that thou art wretched and miserable and poor and blind and naked, Revelation 3:17. My brethren, this is not against you, for it is Yahshua speaking, who died for you, but it will be if you change not your course of action. Okay, if Yahshua, by assembling these seven congregations in a group of seven candlesticks and giving the blackest record to the last one, is not calling the Laodicean Babylon, then neither is the interpretation of the heads doing so. It is not because the Laodiceans are better that they are not called Babylon, for their record is worse. But it is to show that on account of their increased light, he is to deal differently with them. It is to prove that if the angel, leadership of the congregation of the Laodiceans, should reject the message of the true witness, we cannot call the 144,000 out from the midst of them into another movement by the call of Revelation 18. Come out of her, my people, that ye be not partakers of her sins, that ye receive not of her plagues, Revelation 18:4. But rather, by the message of the Revelation 7 and Ezekiel 9, thus speedily releasing his people and quickly finish the work and cut it short in righteousness, because the short work will Yahweh make upon the earth, Romans 9:28. So V.T. Hotta, writing this Shepherd God, Volume 2, in about 1931, he believed that this was given to him that would take place immediately once he delivers this message to the Adventists. He felt like that he was on time with his movement, which he didn't have a movement, but he thought he did. And he thought he was on time, and since Yahweh was unfolding these prophecies to him, he thought that all he had to do is take it to the Adventist Church and Yahweh would deliver immediately, like he did with Moses and children of Israel down in Egypt. Okay, so now it says, disobedience to the word of Yahweh is blasphemy. And blasphemy is hypocrisy. That is to say, they are not what they profess to be. Hypocrisy hides a crying sin under the appearance of virtue. This sin of hypocrisy is difficult to cure in that it is not easily discovered by men. We cannot understand the hearts of others, nor discern between the cloak of hypocrisy and the life of holiness. A spiritual deception has its beginning from a being other than human. Therefore, the scheme is so cunning that it cannot be discerned by the finite observation. This kind of deception can only be recognized under the close scrutiny of the Holy Word of Yahweh and by the aid of His Spirit. The effectual means to cure such a well-devised plan of deception is a steadfast belief. In that there is an all-seeing eye of Yahweh who sees sin wherever it is and will bring it into judgment. A hypocrite may hide his sin from the eyes of others and sometimes from his own conscience, but can never impose upon Yahweh. Paul, looking forward to such a time as this, said, "For the time will come when they will not endure sound doctrine, but after their own lust shall they heap to themselves teachers, having itching ears, and they shall turn away their ears from the truth, and shall be turned unto fable." 2 Timothy 4, 3 and 4. Thou therefore, which teachest another, teachest thou not thyself? Thou that preachest a man should not steal, dost thou steal? Thou that sayest a man should not commit adultery, dost thou commit adultery? Thou that abhorrest idols, dost thou commit sacrilege? Thou that makest thy boast of the law, or through breaking the law, dishonest thou Yahweh. Romans 2, 21-23. Unto the careless and indifferent, Job comments as follows: "He shall devour the strength of his skin. Even the firstborn of death shall devour his strength." Job 18:13. The seven heads are to be symbolically point out these high places ruled by the unsanctified leaders who have attempted to mix the sacred with the common and refuse to hear the words of the Yahweh. The biblical number seven, denoting completeness, naturally would comprise all Christendom at the time that the prophetic truth is made known. Such apostasy is not a strange thing in the history of Yahweh's people. For time and again, the congregation has fallen under a satanic flood. In Luther's day, conditions were as bad as when the congregation crucified Yahshua. If this generation is more wicked than any before it, what would immunize its congregation from just such an apostasy? It is accepted by most Bible students that prophecies of this nature are understood only when the prophetic object in the view is fully developed. Therefore, this is the time of which the symbols speak. However, there is another angle to this by which we shall prove that the facts presented are true. One head wounded unto death. Okay, John says, "I saw one of his heads as it were wounded unto death," as the wounded head has reference to the stroke delivered to the papacy by the Luther. The exile of the Pope in 1798 was a sign of the completeness of the wound and that the prophetic period had ended, thus fulfilling the words, "He that leadeth into captivity shall go into captivity," Revelation 13:10. Had not the prophecy received the deadly wound by Luther, the Pope could not have been put into prison by the French general, for before the pontifical authority received Luther's sword, the Pope reigned supreme. that the blow weakened his power, and the result was that Protestantism came upon the stage of action. The continual infliction began to irritate the head until finally the Pope landed behind prison bars. The annoyance continued until 1870, when ultimately the temporal power of the Pope was taken away. That being the last vexation of the head, it showed that it was left to heal its deadly wound. Long time. According to the words of Luther explaining how the papacy was wounded, I put forward Yahweh's word, I preached and wrote, this was all I did, and yet while I was asleep, the word that I had preached over through popery, so that now the prince nor emperor has done it so much harm, yet I did nothing, the word alone did it all. The Great Controversy, page 190. I began this work in Yahweh's name, said Luther, it will be ended without me and by his might. Page 142. Let none misunderstand the following statement, for the same author has recorded them both. Therefore, it would be unjust to misconstrue the one statement. By so doing, we would throw out of the harmony the other. Speaking of the 1260 years, we read, this period is stated in the preceding chapters, began with the supremacy of the papacy, A.D. 538, and terminated in 1798, and at that time the Pope was made captive by the French army, and the papal power received its deadly wound, and the prediction was fulfilled. He that leadeth into captivity shall go into captivity. Note that the aim of the author in this statement is not to tell how the wound was received, but to show that the prophetic period ended with the imprisonment of the Pope, which fulfilled not the words, and I saw one of his heads as it were wounded unto death. Revelation 13:3. But rather the scripture quoted, he that leadeth into captivity shall go into captivity. Revelation 13:10. Shall we ignore Yahweh and his spirit and give unto Berthier the credit of thus justifying stupidity? His deadly wound was healed, and I saw one of his heads as it were wounded to death. And his deadly wound was healed, and all the world wondered. After the beast, Revelation 13:3. Now, these seven heads that was on this beast, that represents the seven churches of Israel, folks. They represent Ephesus, Smyrna, Pergamos, Thyatira, Sardis, Philadelphia, and Laodicea. Laodicea is the Seventh-day Adventist church. It's a prophecy here. Those seven candlesticks in Revelation 1 with the seven angels in charge of them. It's the mystery of the seven stars and the seven candlesticks and the seven churches. It says it's a mystery. Well, yeah, and here it is in this prophecy here, Revelation 13:3, that this here papacy has taken captive the whole body of Israel. The seven churches being complete body of Israel. And Martin Luther is called to expose that in the Catholic Church. And Yahweh called him in about 1500. And by 1517, the Reformation was well underway with Martin Luther. Okay. So it says his deadly wound was healed, and all the world wondered after the beast. William Miller proclaimed the prophetic period of the 2300 days prior to 1844. That was 1833. That wonderful prophecy was delivered unto Christendom with great power by the Spirit of Yahweh. Christendom is talking about all the house of Israel. Okay, though the leaders of the nominal churches did not contradict the truth presented by the Miller, they turned a deaf ear into the doctrine taught by him. But as the disappointment came in 1844 through the misunderstanding of what was to transpire at the end of the prophetic period, the movement created by Miller came to unto its end. The second angel's message of Revelation 14:8 had announced that Babylon, the churches prior to 1844 had fallen. Those seven churches had fallen. When did they fall? They fell when they rejected the message of Ellen G. White and the Adventist message and the little Advent banner. They rejected them in 1844. And the Millerites and the 50,000 following him turned back. And they wouldn't come on into the Adventist movement, which was the fourth movement. The Millerites had the third movement. And they wouldn't come on into the fourth movement, and prophecy indicated that they were not supposed to. So that's the way that was supposed to end up. That is to say, Yahweh would let no light shine upon his word through these fallen churches. Now, what were those seven fallen churches? They were Ephesus, Smyrna, Pergamos, Thyatira, Sardis, Philadelphia, and Laodicea. And the thing is, Laodicea was the seventh one, and it says right here, these churches are fallen. Right, when did Laodicea finally fall? Representing all of the seven candlesticks, when did she fall? She fell in 2003. With the angel of the candlestick in charge, Willis Johnson. Had Yahweh not called forth another Protestant movement, the deadly wound would have been healed at that time. See, V.T. Hollis says, he should have said, a Protestant reform movement. Now let's go ahead. By the divinely called a movement and aided by the writings of the spirit of prophecy, Yahweh's intention was to keep the deadly wound on the head, but the prophetic word of the Elohim says his deadly wound was healed. Since Elohim's holy word declares that the wound was healed, and as the prophecy cannot be broken, it is positive that the wound is healed. But if Protestantism, by the obedience of the Elohim's word, is what inflicted the wound, then true Protestantism only can keep the painful sore on the head. If the wound is healed, then it is evident that they unto whom Elohim had committed the message for a perishing world have been defeated in the same manner as every movement since the world began. It is a most wonderful thing to note how the old enemy has succeeded in defiling the church in every age through its leadership. The highest human intellect has been continually led into error, and thus have served Satan under their own downfall. But Elohim's people never profit by these historical and biblical facts. Are not these things written for our admonition upon whom the ends of the world are come? Yahweh, by his holy word, commands, "Seek ye for man whose breath is in his nostrils. For wherein is he to be accounted of?" Isaiah 2:22. Alright, it says, "As it hath been accepted that the elite of the Pope in 1798 was a signal that the infliction had been accomplished. So then, as he has gained back his temporal power, the future proves that the deadly wound is healed. These facts cannot be denied, for it is admitted that the incident of 1798 is true. Therefore, the one in 1929 cannot be refuted. That being so, this is the time under which the prophetic symbol speaks his deadly wound was healed. Read the Separate Rod, Volume 1, for the entire volume deals with that subject. All the world wanted us to be. His deadly wound was healed, John said. And all the world wanted after the beast. Note that the world wanted after the beast and not after the head. Therefore, it cannot mean that the world would necessarily have to enroll in the membership of the system represented by the head. For the significance is that all the world has partaken of the spirit of the beast, worldliness. The world in general has never been otherwise. It could not be said that all the world wanted after these if the people whom Elohim has entrusted with the gospel are free from the spirit of the beast. So you see right there, Vitalis is making a point very clear that the Adventist church has to be included in all the world wanted after these are... They couldn't say that Adventists were entrusted with the truth, and they couldn't say that they were free from the spirit of the beast, because they have embraced the beast himself, and they're in prophecy anyway to be one of those seven congregations of Israel that the beast is in charge of, that have taken them captive. But it must be that they have betrayed their trust and partaken of his spirit. Where is the distinction between the congregation and the world? Well, you couldn't find a distinction down in Kermit to save your life. You couldn't find no distinction down there between the church and the world. They were just one and the same. And the divisions were the same way. And the Adventists were the same way up to the 1930 when the Shepherd Rod came on the scene. Adventists were the same way. They haven't changed a bit. The name of blasphemy. And upon his head is the name of blasphemy. That is resistance of the known truth. Expression of the defiant impiety and irreverence toward the Yahweh are things held sacred. By the marking of Yahweh's personality and authority, as with the prophet Isaiah, looking forward unto this time of the wholesale deception, headed by so-called spiritual gods, says, and in that day seven women shall take a hold of one man, saying, we will eat our own bread and wear our own apparel, only let us be called by thy name to take away our reproach. Isaiah 4:1. It is an admitted fact among Bible students that churches are symbolized by women. Pure women, pure church, as in Jeremiah 6:2, Revelation 12:1. Vile women, corrupt church, as in the Revelation 17:4-5. Isaiah says there are seven women. The number comprises these same churches. They said, we will eat our own bread. They want to have their own way. They care not for Yahweh's way, parentheses, his word. We will wear our own apparel. That is, they want their own plans and preferences. Yahweh's plans are his righteousness. Thereby they clothe themselves with self-righteousness. Their aim is to be called by the one man's name. That is, by the name of Yahshua. And to take away the reproach. People have come to suppose they can do most anything under the guise of Christianity and get away with it. Yahweh will let them continue their course until they, like Belshazzar, have passed the boundary line of divine grace, and then he will call them to account. And they worship the dragon, which gave power unto the beast. And they worship the beast, saying, who is like unto the beast? And who is able to make war with him? Revelation 13:4. The question may be asked, how can professed Christians worship the dragon? The answer is easy, and the worship of the dragon can be clearly seen. The present system of the worship of the so-called Christian institutions of the Seventh-day Adventist Church is unquestionably pagan. Sunday, Christmas, and Easter keeping, etc. Well, we know that Adventists don't have any discretion when it comes to worshiping on Sunday either. They go to Sunday keeping churches on Sundays and worship with them. And Sunday keeping churches come to the Adventist church on Sabbath and worship with them. So they pretty well changed that little situation, exchanged that one out. Originated in the ancient doctrine from the old pagan religion in honor of the sun god. Christians in modern times assume, this is a Sunday keeping Christians, Gentiles, in modern times assumed to honor the Most High Yahweh with pagan customs, calling them Christian doctrines. Well, Adventists have adopted those same Christian doctrines, pagan customs, and they're preaching from their pulpit. They have the Christmas tree every Christmas right there in the pulpit. They move the pulpit all the way and they put the Christmas tree in the place of it. Protestantism has taken a grip on these pagan festivals as a leech on a human body. As the slugger sucks the blood unaware that his satisfaction brings him to destruction, just so with the Protestants and their pagan commemoratives, even daring to call them by the name of Yahshua, blasphemy indeed. For the every student of the ancient history knows this to be true. Likewise, every Bible student knows that these so-called Christian festivals are unbiblical as well as unchristian. If these institutions were Christian or biblical, they would certainly have been spoken of in the scriptures. But since they are not found in the word of Yahweh, Christians had better leave them alone, lest they be found worshiping the dragon. Jeremiah, looking forward to this time of the apostasy, said, thus saith Yahweh, learn not the way of the heathen, and be not dismayed at the signs of the heaven. For the heathen are dismayed at them, and for the custom of the people are vain. For one cutteth a tree out of the forest, the work of the hands of the workmen, with the axe. They dig it with silver and with gold. They fasten it with nails and with hammers that it move not. Jeremiah 10:2-4. Though the word declares, I learn not the ways of the heathen, the professed ministers of the gospel will cut a tree from the forest and deck it with silver and gold, and dare call it by the name of Yahshua, a Christmas tree. What greater blasphemy can one do? Are ministers and religious teachers ignorant of these things? Yahshua said, Yahweh is a spirit, and they that worship him must worship him in the spirit and in the truth. Okay. That's John 16. I believe 13. No, John 4. 22-23, I believe. John heard the men defying Yahweh, saying, who is like unto the beast? Who is able to make war with them? That is, who can abolish this pagan system of other worship? Is there none? They challenge Elohim's authority. It may not be said by words, but it most decidedly expressed by the action. Men's discernment is blunted by sin, and when an attempt is made to associate as sacred with the common or pagan, they see no evil, though the word Yahweh declares, but in all things approving ourselves as the ministers of Yahweh. And such patience in afflictions and necessities and distresses and strife and imprisonments and tumults and labors and watchings and fasting by pureness, by knowledge, by the long suffering, by the kindness, for the Holy Spirit, by love unfeigned, by the word of the truth, by the power of Yahweh, by the armor of the righteousness on the right hand and on the left, by the honor and dishonor, by the evil report and good report, as deceivers and yet as true, as unknown and yet well known, as dying and behold we live, as chastened and yet not killed, as sorrowful yet always rejoicing, as poor yet making many riches, having nothing and yet possessing all things. O you Christian, our mouth is open unto you, our heart is enlarged. Be ye not unequally yoked together with unbelievers. For what fellowship hath the righteousness with the unrighteousness? And what communion hath light with darkness? And what concord hath Yahshua with Belial? Or what part hath he that believeth with an infidel? And what agreement hath the temple of Yahweh with idols? For ye are the temple of the living Yahweh, as Yahweh hath said, I will dwell in them and walk in them, and I will be their Elohim, and they shall be my people. Wherefore come out from among them and be ye separate, saith Yahweh, and touch not the unclean thing, and I will receive you, and will be a father unto you, and you shall be my sons and daughters, saith Yahweh Almighty. 2 Corinthians 6, 4-11 and 14-18. And it is open disobedience unto the plain, thus saith Yahweh, that has brought about confusion and disgrace in the apostolic and the Christian world at the present time. True, the reformers saw not all these errors and were not responsible, for they had no light upon them, as Yahweh has given a light upon his word by degrees, making it possible to grasp the truth. He expects us to receive it, and thus lead us unto the victory. But one may say, if Yahweh could save others with less life, they should. Why should he give us more life? Of the many reasons, we shall comment on only two. The increased light on the word, Yahweh is able to save a multitude instead of a few. The second reason is, as the last part of the congregation will be translated instead of resurrected, we need sufficient life to prepare us to meet Yahweh, an immortal being. Such ignorance of Yahweh's word in the days of Noah brought the world to its destruction by the water. A similar wicked condition reduced to ashes the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah. In the days of Yahshua, just such hypocrisy and the appearance of the virtue required the life of the Son of Yahweh to preserve the world from destruction. What would the outcome be at this present time? Yahweh cannot destroy the world, for he has a multitude to save. He has no other son for a gift to the church, for Yahshua is the only begotten Son of Yahweh. If Yahweh's ideal is to bless the world through the medium of his congregation on earth, and they unto whom the gospel for the world is committed have left the sheep and are serving the devil in the person of themselves, where is the hope of the world? For the only answer that can be given is woe unto the sinners in Zion. But Yahweh will gather his sheep. He will have a congregation, but what will be the reward of those who were instructed to feed the lamb and are feeding themselves. Yeshua, who sees the end from the beginning and with his all-seeing eye focused on the present-day condition, has said, "Who then is a faithful and a wise servant whom his master hath made ruler over his household to give him meat in due season? Blessed is that servant whom his master, when he cometh, shall find so done. Verily I say unto you that he shall make him ruler over all his goods. But in it that evil servant shall say in his heart, My master delayeth his coming, and shall begin to smite his fellow servant, and to eat and drink with the drunken, the Yahweh of that servant shall come in a day when he looketh not. Now the Yahshua, the son of that servant, shall come in a day when he looketh not for him, and in an hour that he is not aware of, and shall cut him asunder, and appoint him in his portion with the hypocrites, with the heads of the beasts. There shall be weeping and gnashing of teeth." Matthew 24:45-51. Well, we're getting close to the end of our study this hour. Let's do just a review for about a minute. Yahweh has classified in the prophecy the seven stars, the seven ministers, the seven angels of the seven candlesticks as being a whole Israel. And that the dragon took whole Israel captive. He started in the first century with the apostles, new converts. Once the apostles fell away, there was a move underway to capture the whole house of Israel once again. The dragon was in charge of the whole house of Israel at the crucifixion. After the crucifixion, he lost the whole house of Israel. And then after the apostles fell away, then Satan regained the whole house of Israel again under the papacy. Well, this brings to close our study this hour. Contact us at the 11th hour call. That's number 11. Click on our audio archive. We'll close the service now with a song. "Lead Me to the Rock" by the Elijah Davis song that I've written. "Lead me to the rock that is higher than mine, all forever be. And better to the sons of everyone who came to sin and free. For the life and the soul I have to live, there's not a stepping stone. For the greater heights I have to attain is never done alone. Lead me to the rock, oh lead me to the rock, lead me to the rock that's hard enough. Oh, lead me to the place of the Savior's feet, lead me to the mansion of God. Man on a mission came to this world, sort of on the slum. Born in a manger and scarcely a stranger could be seen passing by. Oh, the moon shone bright with the heavenly lights of all the starry hosts. For the brightest one of them all is the one that admired the most. Lead me to the rock, oh, lead me to the rock, lead me to the rock that's hard enough. Lead me to the place that the Savior's feet, lead me to the land of the sky. For short point to them, you fortune, as you lay in the manger crib. For he's a descendant of the one who created the Adam's rib. The convo of many stories he told about the man and the Galilee. How he changed the water and changed the wine and made the blind to see. Lead me to the rock that is higher than mine. Lead me to the sun that never runs dry. Lead me in the path by the river of life. Lead me to the land of the sky. Brother, lead me to the garden that never runs dry. Lead me to the rock that is hard and nigh. Lead me to the rock, oh, lead me to the rock, lead me to the rock that's high and high, and lead me to the face of the sailor's feet, lead me to those mountains in the sky. Oh yes, lead me to those mountains in the sky.